NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods, here with my excellent co-hosts, Weilin Wong and Adrian Ma.
Hello.
And the three of us are here today for a listener questions episode.
Yay, love listener questions. On today's show, we're going to be going on vacation, we are visiting the bond market, and we're going to college.
All that after the break.
This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. This spring, Mint Mobile has unlimited talk, text, and data plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. Go to mintmobile.com/indicator. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
All right, list of questions. First up, we have Katie from San Francisco.
Hello, Indicator team. My family visited my husband's family in Iceland this summer, and as usual, we had trouble explaining the differences between dollars and krona to our nine-year-old. He knows what the exchange rate is, but doesn't understand why the equivalent of $1 doesn't often purchase the same amount of product in Iceland as it does in the U.S. Could you please do a kid-friendly explainer of currency exchange and purchasing power?
What a bright and curious nine-year-old. So, Darian, are you going to do like a Bluey-style explainer for this nine-year-old on purchasing power?
It's a fantastic show, and I don't think I will do a Bluey-style explainer. But I'll do my best to do a kid-friendly explainer. Here we go. Currency is another word for money, and different countries have different currencies. In the US, we use US dollars. Iceland has the krona.
On Bluey, they use dollar bucks.
They do. And today, $1 is worth 132 Icelandic krona. And so that means if you buy things worth a dollar in the US, like, I don't know, a dollar slice pizza, those kind of things would usually cost you about 132 Icelandic krona. Now, it might sound like it's way more expensive, but it's actually the same amount of money, just like our 100 pennies is $1. But as Katie's kid probably found out this summer, prices can be really different in Iceland than they are in the US, even after you change your dollars for krona.
Okay, so no 132 krona slice then?
No, and not just because it's not as catchy as a dollar slice. It's because in Iceland, it might require more resources to make a pizza. Maybe the cheese has to be shipped in from overseas, or maybe the tomatoes too, whereas in the US, those things might be made locally. But it does leave us with a puzzle. Currency exchange should mean you can buy similar things for the same amount of money. But it doesn't always work out that way, often because of the specifics of the thing you're trying to buy. And one way to solve this puzzle is to think about prices inside the US. So you still use US dollars when you're buying a pizza in, say, Fresno, as in San Francisco. But the pizza prices in San Francisco might be more expensive. In other words, sometimes prices are different for reasons that have nothing to do with the currency.
Well, we hope that settles Katie's kid's vacation question. And now, summer is over, vacation is over. So our next question comes from a high school teacher.
I'm Peter Kim. I'm an economics teacher here in Loudoun County, Virginia. And one of the concepts that my students have struggled with in the past is the relationship between bond prices and interest rates. So my question for the indicator is, why do bond prices and interest rates move in opposite directions?
Peter, doing the Lord's work, teaching economics to students. And this is one of those concepts that I almost take for granted because I've been talking about it for so long. When interest rates go up, bond prices tend to go down and vice versa. But why? Why? So let's start with a refresher on bonds. Let's talk about government bonds, also known as U.S. Treasuries. This is a little loan you give the U.S. government, right? The government gets to borrow your money. In return, you get a regular payout until the term of this loan is up. Now, we said it once, we have said it 100 times. Adrian and Darian, U.S. Treasury bonds are what?
They're boring.
Safe.
Is that the answer?
Well, I would say they're fascinating, but but yes, they're boring. Like, they are not volatile investments. They're the kind of investment you bring home to meet your parents. So in other words, the U.S. is good for the money. If you put money in a treasury, you will almost certainly get your money back on time. Now, enter from stage left, interest rates. Remember, an interest rate is essentially the cost of borrowing money. So it's what the government pays you over time for the money you're lending the government. Now, when the Fed raises interest rates, the cost of borrowing money goes up across the economy. It even goes up for the U.S. government. And so the government is going to pay you more to borrow money from you. Now, U.S. Treasury bonds will have a higher interest rate. That means that anyone holding these bonds will make more money on their investment. I hope Peter and his students are following me so far. How are you guys doing?
I mean, this is great. So interest rates are higher. If I want to buy a bond, I'm going to be looking at these new higher interest rate bonds. They look pretty good.
Exactly. Now, there are billions of dollars worth of treasury bonds getting bought and sold every day in financial markets too, right? So now imagine you're in the bond markets, you're looking for somewhere to invest your money, and Darian, like you noticed, the new treasuries being sold by the U.S. government have higher interest rates. They look pretty good compared with the older bonds out there that have the lower rates. You see where this is going?
Yeah, I see those older bonds with the lower interest rates aren't getting a lot of love at the moment.
No, they're not. So what does that do to their prices?
Prices fall.
Ding, ding, ding. The price of bonds falls to encourage people to buy them.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
And now we're going to leave the world of high school behind and go to college. Is that right, Adrian?
That's right. We got a ton of feedback about our episode on California's ban on race-based affirmative action. A lot of the questions from that were about the aftermath. Here's listener Steve from San Diego.
With competitive schools like UCLA and Berkeley still in high demand, can you bring us the rest of the story about how far these schools have come in restoring diversity and opportunity for students? For example, how do graduation rates and incomes compare now across racial groups after affirmative action ended?
Thanks for that question, Steve. To get the answer, we reached out to Zach Bleemer, assistant professor of economics at Princeton, who we interviewed on that affirmative action episode. And Zach says there are currently more Black and Hispanic students in the University of California system today than there were in the late 90s. But
the number of Hispanic students coming out of California high schools has grown at a far faster rate than the number of Hispanic students enrolling at the University of California. So what actually happened is that the University of California sort of fell behind the state when affirmative action was banned and has never recovered relative to the level of Black and Hispanic enrollment in California's high schools.
Zach says the university system tried a couple of policies that did boost Black and Hispanic enrollment. One of these policies was that students that were in the top percentage of their high school class were guaranteed admission to a UC school. Another was where application readers at these schools would take a more comprehensive look at students' application, not just focusing on things like test scores. But these policies never got the university system anywhere close to the relative level of racial diversity they had under affirmative action. Now, one thing that has increased since the affirmative action ban, the number of low-income students at the University of California. The campuses made a bunch of changes to their admissions policies to try and give a leg up to the relatively lower income students. Things like ending advantages for legacy candidates and kids of donors. But Zach says these policies don't seem to be helping Black and Hispanic students all that much.
Proportionally, the lower income students who have been flowing into the University of California have been disproportionately students who are either white or Asian, and so come from backgrounds that are relatively more racially represented at the University of California, despite being underrepresented in terms of class.
So basically, Zach is saying that if other universities are looking to California for answers on how to increase racial diversity without considering race, California is actually kind of disappointing.
Thanks to all our listeners who sent in their burning economics questions. We've got lots of links in today's show notes. If you have an econ question you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, send us an email. We're at indicator@npr.org.
This episode was produced by Brittany Cronin with engineering by Debbie Daughtry. It was fact-checked by Sierra Juarez. Kate Kincannon edits the show, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.